welcome into the Illini Choir podcast. It is Jeremy Warner and Joey Wagner with you. We are still about a week and a half away from Big Ten Media Days, but we're starting to gear up for the season. We have started our position primers, which Joey, as much as we're trying to kind of help our audience, right, get ready for the season and kind of reset, it's a good reset for us so far as well. So I've done quarterbacks and wide receivers. I'm working on the O-line right now. You've done running backs and tight ends. What's kind of caught up in your mind as we've started to do those position primers?
Not as much with the running backs and tight ends, because I pretty much knew, like, okay, this is what these look like. But I just finished up defensive line yesterday, and it was just a reminder that there's a lot of change here, both personnel, schematically, obviously, and I don't really know what to expect. And it reminded me that Illinois has a lot of unproven in the Power Four defensive linemen, and they need somebody. This might be a good segue, Jeremy, into our podcast. They need somebody to take a star turn on that defensive line, and it might not be a newcomer that they need to do so.
Yeah, even doing like tight ends, offensive line, defensive line, linebackers, like the areas around the line of scrimmage, there's a lot of change there, Joey, just personnel-wise. We haven't even gotten to the coaching part of that. We know the big coaching things. We've talked about the defensive line ad nauseum and the defensive changes. But, yeah, personnel-wise, huge changes. But as we've done quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, and DBs, this is like a skill position program right now. Hey, that's kind of what refreshed in my mind of how far Barry Loney has taken this offense to where wide receiver and quarterback, there's not a lot of concerns there. Like running back, there's good players there. You just want a little bit more production in that running game. But yeah, tight ends, offensive line, defensive line, linebackers, tons of personnel change, which is why I think, you know, expectations are higher for Illinois football now. Like bowl games are expected, and it should be with this team, but can this team be a 9-10 win team? I think that's where all these changes personnel-wise and scheme on defense. It's like, yeah, maybe we're a little bit more pragmatic, and the expectations of what the ceiling of this team is a little capped, even though the schedule provides a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, that's 100% right. You talk about the wide receivers. There are wide receivers who aren't going to start on this team who might be that fourth, fifth, maybe sixth. That might be a stretch. Who start from like 2016 to 2020, maybe 2021. Like it's just, there's been a huge uptick in talent in that wide receiver room. George McDonald was a big part of that early, Justin Stepp since then, and then Barry Loney. And the way that your offense can attract wide receivers to come play with the quarterbacks, to come play in the way that you throw that football around. So yeah, it is pretty skill position heavy right now on this team. And that's a good thing to have, I think, probably in this modern day. But like you said, there are questions on the defensive line, and really the offensive line. We kind of, Bart Miller, for as much as people want to get frustrated with some of the inconsistencies of the offensive line, and that has existed, right? Like those inconsistencies existed, especially early in the season. He's earned the benefit of the doubt to me that I'm looking at the talent of the projected starting five in my mind. I'm like, I think they'll be okay. There might be some growing pains, and that's part, especially at tackle. But I don't have a lot of concerns. I have some like, oh, you really need this guy to do this. But I think Bart Miller is really good at his job. And I don't have like that freak out or the big questions like I have at other positions, namely tight end, defensive line, and just the overall confusion of linebacker.
Yeah, we'll dive into it more as the season goes along. We'll do our position previews on here. But offensive line, I worry about like unit consistency. Individual development's been a strength. Like I think he's done a really good job, but it's the slow starts, man. I expect a slow start out of this group, right? I think we all expect some growing pains out of this group. It's the fact that last year had the slow start. Doesn't make any freaking sense. Still doesn't make any sense to me that group struggled there, but I think they're hoping their quarterback helps them out. And just offensively, I don't have a lot of questions for a Barry Loney led group that's got really, really good position player, your talent. So we'll dive more into that. Today's podcast, we are going to focus on breakout potential stars for this team. And there's so many ways you can define breakout players. Like, is it a guy that goes from not playing as a freshman to all of a sudden making the rotation like a Braden Trimble? I think breakout has more of like a star quality, Joey. So that's kind of how I'm defining it. We'll dive into another podcast about X factors, kind of swing players that could swing this season. I think a Caden Fagan would kind of be in that category for me. So for this is kind of guys we know, but that we think elevate into a different role. So we're going to dive into that today on the podcast. I do want to say, if you don't have VIP access, sign up now. 50% off. You can get all our position primers. Kyle is doing a fantastic job with the player outlooks on the basketball side. Just such an in-depth look. Kyle's no longer considered a rookie, Joey, but this is veteran quality content out of Kyle Toss right now with our basketball player outlooks.
Yeah, Kyle is delivering in a huge way. I mean, I told him before you told him, I'm really impressed with what Kyle has brought to the table, both on the pod and the written content has been exceptional. We are a Brett Bielema away from this being a basketball pod right now in the middle of July. And I know you do a lot of basketball pods, but if football wouldn't have taken the steps that it's taken, it would have just been basketball from, October to October, right? Like, yeah. It would have been nonstop, just an incredible emphasis. But football has earned a lot more conversation. But, man, basketball's good, and we got a really good guy covering it.
Yeah. Got recruiting stuff going on now, so Kyle and I will convene on this podcast, talk a little bit about recruiting, including an in-state offer here recently with Ed Stasis. I caught up with him. You can check that out at awanaenquirer.com as well. I do want to hit on this. CBS Sports, our friends over there, did a hottest seats in college football. We've had a lot of change in the Big Ten here, now with Pat Fitzgerald coming into the league, Bob Chesney at UCLA, who I'm really, really high on what he can do. So we've had a lot of turnover in this league the last couple of years. Joey, do you want to guess who they say is on the hottest seat in the Big Ten?
Well, I would think Maryland would be up there.
Very high. Out of a 5 scale, they have a 4.9 on Mike Locksley, former Illini offensive coordinator, who's held on there. I do think he deserved this year. They got a talented young quarterback. Their NIL has been an issue, but he is the second highest on their hot seat rankings in the Big Ten. Not very far from Illinois. You just got to go a little north.
Oh, it's Wisconsin. Oh, yeah. Of course. It's Wisconsin. It's 10:41. I'm on my second cup of coffee. That didn't hit with me like it should have. You probably guess that right away. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, Luke Fickell's at a 5.0. He's got a new athletic director coming in. He's not played very well. 16-21 under Fickell. Haven't been to a bowl game yet, right? And then they open the season against Notre Dame, of all teams. The only 5.0s in the country, Luke Fickell, Dave Aranda at Baylor, and Mike Norvell at Florida State. Then Mike Locksley, Shane Beamer. Illinois started him on that downward trend, apparently, a couple years ago. And then Bill Belichick. One other Big Ten coach over a 3.5. Do you want to guess who that is? Big-time job. Big-time job with a lot of pressure on it. It was a big hire a couple years ago.
I'm drawing a blank.
Go West, young man. Illinois USC beat them last year. Yeah, Lincoln Riley at a 3.8. What's amazing, as we think about this, and I thought about Barry Loney, like, Illinois's got that level of offense right now, and right now, like, in the Big Ten, Illinois should be in the same tier. I don't think they're thought of on the same tier as USC, but I think they are in all reality, even though USC gets a different level of talent, right? But when it comes to actual on-the-field winning, Illinois is, you know, at that same level and beat them last year. So that's what's pretty amazing. And, yeah, when you're paying a guy over that long a time, $100 million plus, Joey, there's going to be some pressure when you're not making college football playoffs.
Yeah, USC is interesting because you say that and all that makes sense. But then if you open up some preseason top 25s, there's some dark horses for the playoffs. USC is right there. So I mean,
right along with Nebraska.
That point. That's right. It's kind of at that point where it's like, okay, if this feels like if you're going to do it, this is the year to really put that run together if you're USC. But yeah, it feels like you're getting to, at least for a window here, a little bit of head coaching stability in the Big Ten because there's been so much change.
Matt Campbell
coming
into
this. Yeah, that's interesting. It is officially hot seat and then soon to be playoff dark horse season in college football.
Yeah, and a lot of them kind of overlap. USC, Nebraska would be the next on the list at 3 is his hot seat ranking for Matt Rhule entering year 4 in this. Brett Bielema at a 0.9. That seems high to me.
Too high. Drop it.
That's far too high for me for Brett Bielema. I think his seat is very, very, very cool, as it should be given what he has accomplished here. But,
and you know who's going to tell guys that he's trying to flip in October and November that his seat is very, very cool? Brett Bielema. Like, that is a recruiting pitch for Illinois football right now. And that's a big deal. Like, it's not the end-all, be-all, but if you can – not guarantee. There's no guarantees in college athletics. But if you can come pretty close to that, saying, hey, I'm going to be here all 5 years now of your college career, that matters. Like, that sells. And you've had some outside of the defense. There's been a lot of key assistant coaches that have stuck around Illinois football, and coincidentally, those position groups are moving along pretty good right now.
Yeah, they are. By the way, Trezevant Boyd, a 3-star Florida defensive back, scheduled to commit at some point on Wednesday as we're recording this. So Illinois in a great spot there. So it seems like Corey Parker in the defensive backfield could add another player, a little undersized but really quick, and they've locked onto him as a target for a long time. So that could be another piece, and I would project that to be another piece Illinois adds to this class. We'll see when he announces, but we'll have coverage of that at IlliniEnquirer.com. All right, Joey, breakout players for 2026 for Illinois football. We'll break down some offensive guys, some defensive guys. This might seem like I don't think there's going to be a lot of surprises here. Like, we will do our swing guys, X factors, where we'll dive into some guys that have bigger questions. But I think this is just an opportunity to talk about guys who have to step into star roles, with guys like Gabe Backus, Luke Altmaier, Hank Beatty moving on, right? Guys in the defensive backfield like Miles Scott moving on. They have to have guys that step into rotational roles, starting roles, into star roles here. And can I start us off with the most obvious one?
Yeah, hold on real quick, though, because as I was writing this, I was going to text you. I just want to make sure we are clear. When we say star, we're not saying, like, first or second team all Big Ten, but I do think we're talking about an honorable mention type guy, a guy who is playing significant snaps and roles and just kind of having an impact on winning. We're not saying here's a list of 15 NFL draft picks and this we're going to populate the first and second team all Big Ten team. So star is relative, and I was kind of struggling with that, so I wanted to, one, turn it to you, and two, just kind of put out there what exactly that means.
Yeah, for me, I'll dive into a guy that I don't think should put up big stats, but I think in the building, he will be considered a star just because of the role that he plays and a role that Illinois must fill. But then there are guys who will put up monster stats or need to put up big stats and will be like the faces of this team. But I think we know, like, we don't have to mention Xavier Scott and Matthew Bailey. Right? Like, I don't think we have to name those guys. But can I start with our breakout candidates with the obvious guy, but a guy we should talk about? Caton Hauser, right? He is the new quarterback of this team. And you saw Brett Bielema tweet out a list of the top 10 quarterbacks in the Big Ten. It's off-season Brett Bielema on Twitter, which is entertaining as hell. And he said, shh, with his guy in Caton Hauser. They lost one of the best quarterbacks in program history, and now program legend, given not only just his story, but how effective he was, how many games he won, in Luke Altmaier. They replaced him with Caton Hauser, Joey. And just from talking with people in the program, the way they talk about Caton Hauser, it doesn't sound like they expect a huge drop-off at this position. So let's talk about that. That Caton Hauser is coming in here more like a Tommy DeVito, in that he's a one-year guy. There's not a long runway like there was with Luke Altmaier, but he comes in more prepared, I think, to succeed into a program that I think is more ready to surround a quarterback with talent than I think the 2023 team you look back on. And there's some talent there, but there were some questions on the offensive line. There was questions at running back, like Reggie Love ended up being your number one running back that year. I think Caton Hauser is surrounded with talent. The offensive line has to prove itself, but running back and wide receiver are well equipped this year. Your offense is way more established under Barry Lunney entering year 5 rather than year 2 when Luke Altmaier got here. Guy's got the talent. The guy has proven it at the group of 4 level, group of 5 level, and he's been a Big Ten quarterback before. But they got him at Big Ten Media Days. They have him, I think, is probably, I think you and I would think, is going to be a team captain after the way they talk about him. But just what do you think? Because I think the expectation is for him to be a top half quarterback in the Big Ten internally. And I think everything they've said about him, the way they've carried him, that they think Caden Hauser is going to be a really good Big Ten quarterback right away and continue to carry this mantle of high expectations at quarterback.
Yeah, I've gotten that similar vibe just in the way that they talk about him. And I expect that to really heat up once training camp starts, and that to be a I expect the team captain and them to really gas up Caden Hauser because he has that experience. And that's something that Luke Altmaier grew into, and he ended up being, you know, depends on how you want to look at a Mount Rushmore quarterback at Illinois. And is Caden Hauser going to jump Luke Altmaier on that? No. Like, I don't think anyone's saying that. And maybe the numbers won't be quite what Luke Altmaier did, but the impact on winning, can you have a guy who can put you in a position to maybe overcome some defensive struggles on this Illinois football team to give you a chance to get back to a 7-8 win if you can swing it, kind of benchmark there? I think there's belief that Caden Hauser can do that. He's got a little bit of a different skill set than Luke Altmaier. You're not going to see him scrambling a ton, I wouldn't imagine, but he's also got the arm to really put it downfield and maybe make some more chunk plays, maybe get some of those drives a little bit quicker with some of his skill position guys, get the ball out quicker. I think that's a big thing, especially as this offensive line comes together. But they believe in this guy, and we wondered, Jeremy, what it was going to look like in the transfer portal, who they were going to get, what they were looking for. Did you want a Luke Altmaier bridge guy? Did you want a stopgap? Did you want to roll with what you had? It doesn't sound like they had a big list of quarterback candidates that they were interested in. Hauser was on a short list. We would say maybe four.
I heard four or five guys, and there was consensus that from, you know, every level, whether it's quarterback coach, offense coordinator, head coach, evaluation staff, right, GM, that they all had Caden Hauser in that group.
Yeah. Now, the thing that I think we should talk about, what this looks like with Caden Hauser, is obviously physically it's going to look different. Those clutch plays that Luke Altmaier really delivered on, can Caden Hauser, and that's a lot to put on the shoulders of Caden Hauser, I understand that, but can you get a couple of those again? Because Illinois plays close games, man. That's what Illinois football does. Do you have that guy? And the way they talk about him, he's got a little swagger to him, a little like California confidence to him, but can he make those plays that Luke Altmaier made that really probably wrangled a win from the jaws of defeat a few times for Illinois football?
Yeah, I think just physical tools. Like, Caden Hauser probably has a bigger arm. He gets the ball out quicker, which could be an area that Luke, and we talked about it throughout last year, like that was an area he struggled in, especially early in the year. But Luke's just showed up all the time at the end of games. His accuracy, like, Caden Hauser's got to prove that at this level. Luke was a really accurate quarterback at this level. The windows are going to be tighter for Caden Hauser. But the other part is, how many of Luke Altmaier's clutch plays were with his legs? Like, how many of those runs were the key plays that prolonged a drive or got Illinois out of a really hairy issue and continued to move them down the field? Like, can Caden Hauser do that, or can he make it up with his arm in a certain way? Those are the things he has to prove. But the bar is high, but they're setting a high bar with the way they talk about Caden Hauser, that they don't think he's going to have a lot of issues living up to it. Now we just got to see it, and now we got to see how he leads this team. But I get some Tommy DeVito vibes kind of with his personality. It's different. It's not quite Tommy, but it's not Luke either. They're different kind of people, and I do get the – I mean, you saw that video of who's the highest-ranked player on the team in the NCAA football game. How many Caden Hauser mentions did you get? That encourages me if his teammates are saying that about him.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the other thing we have to point out is that, yes, the bar is high. Illinois has surrounded him with a lot offensively to reach that bar. Yeah. Now, there are specific question marks we can get into on the line or the tight end or whatever. We can get into the weeds on it a little bit. But if you zoom out with your skill position players, with who my next guy I'm going to mention is, like, I think that really sets Caden Hauser up to hit the ground running. Now, I do want to, like, I don't think we're expecting the Luke Altmaier stat line. That was really, really good stat lines. But if you can be in that neighborhood, a top half of the Big Ten quarterback, maybe a top, I don't know, 6-7s. If you can, no, stop.
My daughter would want me to do that. Well, no, the guy he reminds me of physically is Ethan Calliope-McManus. If you got that, you're happy, right? Like, if you got, I think Ethan could kind of just throw it up to people sometimes with the wide receivers he had, and they could come down with it. So sometimes it's kind of a little bit Rex Grossman style offense, throw it up and hope somebody comes down with it. But I think Caton's a little bit more developed than that. But like that stat line, like you keep saying, you said stat line, I could see him putting up a very similar stat line, if not even better than Luke Altmyer, if this passing offense continues to take another step. My question is, can it lead to winning like Luke Altmyer did? Like that was his superpower, was in those winning moments. He made those plays. And again, the running, that's what I don't know if he's going to be able to do those things. So I think he's going to have a stronger running game around him than Luke did, but I think he can put up those offensive passing numbers. I think he's very capable of that.
Sure, that leads me perfectly into my breakout star.
Give me your breakout.
Khalil Valentine.
Yeah, hold on. Give me your breakout guy, because I talked over you there.
No, yeah, it's Khalil Valentine is my breakout guy. I think the stage is set for Khalil Valentine to be that breakout guy. Just in what you've seen, one, the way they empowered him as a freshman. Like, that Kansas game was a huge game. And to give him the steal so long ago, but to give him the ball and let him close it out, the way you allowed him to grow into such a big role, really in the back half of last season is when you really started to see those carries start to take off in a big way, started getting those starts. And the other thing, I don't know that Caden Fagan moves to tight end if you don't think Khalil Valentine is ready to take this thing and go. Like, that feels a little bit to me like, yeah, this position's probably better suited for Caden Fagan in the long term, but also it's probably better suited to give Khalil Valentine these carries in the short and intermediate term. And I think those things, Illinois hasn't said that, but I personally believe those things go hand in hand. In a Brett Bielema offense, we know that they can throw the heck out of the football. They also run it pretty well. And Barry Lunny believes in running the football. The offensive line's got to do its part, but it feels like we're probably a few months early on the, whoa, Khalil Valentine has really taken the step, and that's going to show itself middle of October, maybe late October.
He's still got a lot to prove, I think, right? Khalil Valentine, like 600-something rushing yards last year, led the team in rushes, and you saw these spurts of being a number one back. He hasn't had many games where he's had to just carry the offense, right, and carry the rushing attack. It was kind of a three-headed attack last year. But I think one of the reasons it's going to be a big breakout, Joey, is because I think he's going to get as many carries as a running back not named Chase Brown. And I looked this up. It's pretty wild. The Illinois carry leaders under Brett Bielema, his entire tenure here. Chase Brown, 328 in 2022. I don't know if we'll ever see those numbers again. Josh McCray gets hurt, and of course Chase Brown was just a Heisman-level kind of running back. The number two was Chase Brown in 2021 when he was splitting time with Josh McCray. 170 carries. So he went from 170 to 328 the next year. Do you know who's number three on most carries in a season for Illinois football under Brett Bielema?
I want to say it's Reggie Love, but I could be wrong.
Reggie Love's number six at 116 in 2023. That led the team that year, by the way.
I mean, there's only a finite. It's either McCray, Fagan, or Loffrey. I mean,
was Khalil Valentine last year. 131 carries. That was the third most in Brett Bielema's tenure. Fagan was number four, and that was last year at 122. My point is, Khalil Valentine already was starting to creep towards one of the highest carry guys under Brett Bielema, and now you subtract Fagan from that rotation. I don't think those carries are simply going to Jordan Anderson. I do not expect Jordan Anderson to get 100-plus carries on this team. So you're going to condense these carries into Valentine and Loffrey. And Valentine clearly emerged as a number one running back last year. I expect him to get Chase Brown-level 2021 carries if he stays healthy. So 170 to 180, something like that. That's going to be one of the engines of your offense. So, yeah, he is the clear breakout star to me, and maybe he broke out a little bit last year. I don't think it was the full one. I think this is the year you could see Khalil Valentine become that all Big Ten caliber running back, engine of the offense, because when he was on the field, he led Illinois in usage last year. When he was on the field, he got the ball 18% of the time. Number two was Fagan at 17%. They force fed him, tried to get him going, didn't really work all that well. And then Loffrey was next at 14% usage, Beatty at 11%. But He had 9 carries per game his first 8 games, 12 carries over his last 5 games. I think that will move up to about 15 this year, right? I just think they identified him last year that he was their best running back, gave them the highest ceiling, and I do think that move with Fagan opens up a world of carries and touches for Khalil Valentine to be an engine of this offense, like we saw with Chase Brown, but also like a guy like Isaiah Williams, and I would say Hank Beatty was kind of that engine last year, at least early in the season. So, yeah, I think he's going to – out of how many snaps like this offense gets, he's probably going to touch the ball 20, 25% of the time.
Yeah, and to your point, the talent's there, but the options there for him to be it. There's fewer mouths to feed in that running back room, and I still think Jordan Anderson's going to get carries. We're not trying to say this is going to be Valentine and Loughery only, and maybe a freshman or a redshirt freshman jumps in to that mix, but I expect this to be a lot of Khalil Valentine within this offense. And I can already see the YouTube comments when you post this later, Jeremy. It's like, will he get 1,000 yards? We've talked about this. Someone's going to aggregate this. It'll be all over Twitter with a fancy graphic in like 10 minutes. I don't know. I mean, I think the opportunity could be there, but I also think Aiden Loughery is going to have opportunity within this offense to maybe put a hold on that. But I also don't think it's something that you couldn't see as possible either with Khalil Valentine. This is the best chance, I think, for a 1,000-yard back since Chase Brown.
Why do we care so much about that? Just because it's an even number?
I don't know, because it's a beautiful number. And to be fair, Brett Bielema, like that is kind of that before Illinois had kind of been his thing, is like 1,000-yard back, 1,000-yard back. And you could go through and look at it. The game has changed, right? Since some of those early 1,000-yard backs started happening. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's a nice round, clean number.
Yeah, it's just, it feels like the game pace, game per, you know, feels like the plays per game for Illinois isn't all that high. But last year in the Big Ten, there were 6 1,000-yard backs, and 2 of those guys played 16 games because they played for Indiana. The year prior, in 2024, there were 9 of those guys. I do think Khalil Valentine could be that. I don't – in 2023, by the way, there's only 2, Kyle Manungai and Blake Corum. So there are less of those guys. I think he can be. I think he can be one of those guys, but that's not the make or break for me of a successful season for Khalil Valentine. If I would expect he's over 850 if he plays 12 games, though.
Yeah, and a lot. I was actually looking up a little bit for the position primer. A lot of those 1,000-yard backs come at the G4 level or G5 level, where I mean, it's just sometimes it's just your absolute best option for that to happen. There's a handful, I think maybe 20 or so in the Power 4. But yeah, to your point, in the Big Ten, it's just not as many anymore. One, it's
a passing league.
It's a passing, you know, much more passing. But also, I just think it's a lot of people are, hey, this isn't the best for their long term, for their season, to overload them. Illinois had to do that with Chase Brown to some degree, and he delivered on that. But it's just not as prominent as it was. It's just a number that I think a lot of people gravitate to. And I'm a sucker for it a little bit. I find myself kind of like fixating on that. I do wonder in the next 6 years what that number looks like. Will it be 1,000 in 6 years as teams start to spread back out and throw the ball more and more? I don't know. Maybe 850 will be that new 1,000. We'll see.
Yeah, just we get an obsession with that 1,000-yard marker. Guys, we've all been there. Hunger strikes and you're exhausted. There's something healthy in your fridge and pantry that you should be making, but you just don't have it in you to put in the time and effort. And for me, eating healthy isn't a willpower problem. It's a setup problem. Until I found Factor. Factor solves your setup problem with fully prepared meals designed by dietitians and crafted by chefs delivered right to your door. With Factor, I'm hitting my nutrition goals this season without the planning, grocery runs, or cooking. The great part is you can prioritize your nutrition. Factor has meals built around your goals, whether that's weight loss, overall nutrition, more protein, or GLP-1 support. For strength and workout recovery, you can also check out Factor's Muscle Pro Collection. Every meal is crafted with functional ingredients, lean proteins, colorful veggies, whole foods, and healthy fats. Factor bans 175 plus ingredients that aren't very good for you. It's just nutrient-dense food. They're fresh, never frozen meals, over 100 rotating weekly meals, including globally inspired flavors like Mediterranean and Asian. So there's always something new to look forward to. Factor meals are ready in 2 minutes. Factor shops, preps, cooks, and delivers straight to your door, so you have more time for everything you love this spring. So head to factormeals.com/Illini50off and use code Illini50off to get 50% off and free daily greens per box with new subscription only while supplies last until September 27, 2026. Head to factormeals.com/Illini50off. Use code Illini50off to get 50% off and free daily greens per box. All right, my next, I'm going to go to defense. It's a guy who broke out a little bit last year, but I don't think we saw the full power of him. It's Juice Clark. This is a Juice Clark podcast, and I believe in this guy. I thought when he came back, was a huge addition for a secondary that was just reeling after the loss of Xavier Scott. Obviously, Tanner Heckel thrown in the fire, went through his ups and downs. Caleb Patterson did not have a great year. Torrey Cox Jr., I think, is a good player, but was limited physically. But Juice Clark came in there and gave you somebody to compete against Jeremiah Smith and at least give you a chance of defending a guy like that, going up against Denzel Boston and some of the great wide receivers in the Big Ten. He only played 9 games, but he earned all Big Ten honorable mention last year, tied for 6th in the Big Ten with 8 passes defended, didn't have an interception. You always hope, Joey, that once you start getting your hand on the ball, maybe the next year you can learn how to take that one away. So that's what I'm looking for this year out of him. But in 55 targets last year, he allowed 30 receptions for 272 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's an NFL passer rating of 80.3. That's good. That's really good. And he all did it while he wasn't 100% healthy. That hamstring was bothering him most of the year. He said he couldn't run quite as well as he wanted to. So just imagine what he could do with a fully healthy season. He's really good in run support too. He reminds you of some of those Devin Witherspoon being able to trigger and tackle. Xavier Scott has that same thing. You can tell he puts a lot of film study in, and that's what you want. When Devin Witherspoon leaves, Xavier Scott kind of takes that torch, and now Juice Clark kind of takes that torch of just kind of those tenacious defensive backs. So I think he steps up and really solidifies himself as a number one corner. And I think at least, I mean, he's got 2 years of eligibility now with 5 for 5. I think he at least puts himself on NFL draft radars.
Yeah, you're right. This is a Juice Clark podcast. I know after that USC game, when he returned last season, there was a, oh, okay, this changes the secondary a little bit just because of what he brings and what it maybe allows you to spread out in terms of the cornerback room. And he did. He had really, really big moments. There's a lot of swag. I like the swagger that Juice Clark has back there. I think that can be both a little overblown with defensive backs and also incredibly needed for defensive backs to just kind of move on from bad plays, and those are going to happen. Him and Xavier Scott are incredibly close. They are, those two are very, very close. I know the opportunity for those two to play together, I'm pretty confident, is meaningful for them, and I just think it's his chance to be that number, no doubt, number one corner for a whole season, a whole healthy season, because he would have been that a year ago. And yeah, we'll see what that looks like after the season for him. I think he's probably that guy in that Matthew Bailey mold of, hey, start getting the NIL moving here a little bit, because, you know, there's going to be a decision for a Juice Clark or Khalil Valentine, you know, whatever, you know, however many guys that looks like for Illinois. But he's a big part of this secondary just in terms of how he approaches things. He's a media day representative. I'm very excited to talk to him on the podcast and see if we can get him to show some of that personality. But he'll be walking around, you know, when we do interviews either in training camp or during the season, he kind of carries himself, and I been always hesitant. There's a lot of Devin Witherspoon, just confidence, swagger. I'm not saying he's Devin Witherspoon, but like, there's a lot of personality there with him. And yeah, I think in a lot of ways, he's an engine of that secondary. Matthew Bailey is Matthew Bailey, and he's more vocal like that. He'll be a team captain without a shadow of a doubt. But Juice Clark, just his energy back there, his presence back there is really meaningful.
Yeah, just being able to plug him in and have confidence, like, I don't think they had that early in the season before he came back. So he's also a guy that I think it matters. He still hosts recruits on visits. Like, as a fourth-year guy, like, that doesn't happen all that. That's usually a young guy's job. Juice loves this program. Like, absolutely loves this program. So really looking forward to seeing what he can do in year 4.
And to your point, it's time to start getting some takeaways, though.
Yeah.
It's time to really start ramping those up. It wasn't – I remember it was a COVID Zoom I had with Nate Hobbs, but he kind of was a little slower on the ball to make plays early in his career, and then they started happening more and more late in his career. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time, but to your point, when they start happening, you get a little bit of that momentum, maybe you can roll a couple off in a season and start making some game-changing defensive plays. I think this defense is predicated on some of those.
Devin Witherspoon had 2 interceptions his first 3 years and got 3. Plus 14 passes defensed in his last year. So, that can be kind of the arc that a lot of these guys go on. All right, Joey, who's your next one?
This is the most obvious one. I also – hold on, I brought a prop.
Here it comes.
Joe Barna. Can you read that?
I can, yeah.
Great. This has been a Juice Clark podcast, this has very much been a Joe Barna podcast. Over the last few years, but it's really time. It's time for Joe Barna to be that game changer, disruptor, however you want to put it.
Defensive
lineman. It's time, one, because he's been in the system and he's shown flashes. Like, we're not just putting this on somebody who's like, oh, yeah, I guess you could be that guy. He's shown the ability to wreck games. You can go back to Nashville and see that. You can see the way he uses his power against offensive linemen, the way he plays with his motor. Like, all of these things have come up at various times for Joe Barna, but now it just feels like everything's kind of in place for him. I don't expect to ever see him drop back in coverage, obviously, right? Like, just, hey, you got a one gap, go beat the guy in front of you, make plays. And the other part, Illinois needs it. Illinois desperately needs Joe Barna to take that step forward this season. The rest of the defensive line, there are Power 4 recruiting wins out of the transfer portal, right? Carter Jahnke had Power 4 opportunities. I believe Daryl Prater had Power 4 opportunities. But these are a lot of FCS group of 4 guys coming up to the Big Ten. They still have to prove it. Well, Joe Barna's played in the Big Ten. He's had big moments in the Big Ten. Illinois needs those to translate now in this new scheme where he can be the anchor of that defensive line and go and make some of those plays, because let's be honest, like, this defense is probably going to give up some yards on the ground. They're probably going to give up some chunk plays through the air. You negate those a little bit, or you kind of even those out by making negative plays, by being disruptive, by forcing turnovers. I think Joe Barna is going to have a hand in a lot of that. I think he's capable of doing that.
Yeah, and just seeing him do it in the Music City Bowl, man, that was encouraging. Because it's like, there's no Gabe Backus to take, you know, the sight away from you. Like, you are going to be, I don't think they were scheming up for Joe Barna, but like, there wasn't the other guy that's getting you into one-on-one battles. Like, Joe Barna had to earn those big plays, and the fact that he was able to kind of take over that game in certain moments was huge. You don't win that game without Joe Barna doing what he did, and we've seen flashes of it. 3.5 sacks his first 2 years. Now, it's not a ton, but that's in like 450 snaps or something like that.
I think it was less than 200 pass rush snaps.
Too. Yeah. So Gabe Backus's pressure win rate last year was 14.9%. That was great. It's fantastic. Joe Barna wasn't far behind at 13.3%. Now, Gabe turned him into more sacks than Joe Barna would, but you would expect that for a fourth-year superstar in college football. Now it's Joe Barna's turn to take that next leap, and I think if you talk to Gabe Backus, he would be very confident about it. He talked about like he'd learn things from Joe Barna just with the work ethic. So he's built like Gabe. I do think his new position, which is basically a defensive end with his hand on the ground, I think that fits him better than a 3-4 stand-up outside linebacker. I think the scheme fits him really well, where he's just disrupting one gap, not trying to, you know, kind of read and hold that gap. I think that's going to be really encouraging for Joe Barna. So I expect a leap. Is it 5 sacks? Is it 9 sacks? I don't know. Like, but he's got to make those pressures. He's got to be their go-to pass rusher that changes games. And I think he's ready for it.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that bears mentioning is this isn't a position change where you have to project a little bit. Right, like, we've seen some position changes and scheme changes. Like, you think of like a going back to Brett's first year, like an Owen Carney and Isaiah Gay going from ends to outside backers. They did it. Owen Carney did it very, very well, right? But like, you had to kind of project a little bit more. Okay, how's he going to play in space? How's he going to do this? You look at, you know, a guy, you know, even like a Daniel Brown. Okay, now you're back playing at linebacker. You're a little bit more in space. You can do it, but it takes a little bit more. Joe Barna was probably, had the scheme change not change, probably on that Gabe Backus, like, hey, should they just go ahead and move him to the defensive line path? Like, we talked about that a ton.
When he's a prospect.
Is it worth just, that's right. And is it worth just putting on some weight, letting him be that? It's probably what he is at the next level. Joe Barna was probably closer than not to being on that type of at least conversation. I'm not saying they would have done it. Now he's just there. And this, it makes sense. Like, even when Joe was a prospect, like, okay, he's probably going to keep adding weight. He's good with his hand on the ground. I think I remember talking to his high school coach, if I'm not mistaken, about a similar thing. Well, now that's here. So, like, it's just so much easier to see happen mentally, and I think it'll be a pretty seamless transition come season.
Yeah, when he was a prep prospect, I thought he'd be a 4-eye, right, when they ran that defense. So he still got outside linebacker, but I think he fits great on the defensive line. I don't think that's a huge change for him. All right, keeping on the defense, you just mentioned him. I think we can talk about Daniel Brown as a breakout star, right? Because somebody in this defense is playing a different role. We know Matthew Bailey's kind of played this chief kind of hybrid linebacker safety role. I think that becomes even bigger in this defense. But Daniel Brown is the type of linebacker that didn't really have a spot in the last defense, except as kind of a nickel package, third down defense kind of guy. And he was effective in that. I just talked about Gabe Backus's pass rush win rate was 14.9%. Daniel Brown was 14.9% last year. When he was on the field, he was getting pressures in the backfield, 15 pressures and 245 snaps. But now he's off the ball, kind of in this hybrid. Where's he going to line up? Is it on the edge? Is it at Mike linebacker? Like, he could be an amoeba of this defense just like Matthew Bailey is, but he's a unique player, and I think they're putting a lot on him, Joey. So I don't know exactly how it looks. He's had a lot of injury issues. He's only played, what, 12 games, 13 games over the last 2 years. But you talk about this defense and the kind of tweeners who can really excel, Daniel Brown fits the mold. He's a fifth-year guy. He's played linebacker before. He's played on the edge and been effective in situations. So he's going to be a big part of this defense, probably plays 400-plus snaps, maybe 500. And I think he's going to be a guy that is a big-time blitzer. We talk about all the defensive line questions. He's a guy that's got to get consistent pressure and make consistent big plays.
Yeah, Roger Cooper, who is going to be a fun quote this season, I think called him a rhino. Just his ability to use his speed and strength, get downhill, go make some plays as a disruptor at the linebacker spot. This defense needs disruptors at the linebacker spot. There's a little projection with him just in terms of playing in space a little bit more, but a reminder, he did that his first season of JUCO. Now, he ultimately ended up being like the number one edge rusher in JUCO after a second season, but he's got some experience in doing that, and I think Illinois is going to put a lot on him. And I think I'm still fascinated by linebackers, what this all looks like, how everyone kind of ends up, where they end up, and how often they're there. I think he's the guy who really embodies that. And, okay, maybe you might see him here one play and there another play. But wherever he's going to be, the emphasis is going to be go be a problem, right? Go disrupt people. And I think he's the most equipped linebacker to do that and to go be that guy. And obviously we'll see what it looks like for like a Robert Edmondson, a James Crude, a Grant Bierman. But Daniel Brown has shown he can get after the quarterback. He's shown he's strong, he's fast, he can do a lot of these things. Now you got to hold up in some other areas within this defense, but does feel like kind of the show is going to be his at linebacker, and I'm eager to see what that looks like as long as he can stay healthy, because that's been really the knock on him for his college career, is you're just not out there enough.
All right, Joey, who else you got?
Well, now we start getting into, like, I feel like those were a lot of layups.
Yeah.
Right? Like, honestly, that was. I'm going to wide receiver because someone has to.
Who did
to
you
do
pick? It. This is the hard part with me. I have, like, somebody's going to break out here. Somebody's going to have, like, an all Big Ten, even honorable mention kind of season. Is it Hudson Clement? Is it Colin Dixon? Or I even, like, we could talk about Jayshon Platt as an X factor or as a swing guy, which we could in our next podcast. I wouldn't put it past him, given the way they talk about him, to be the breakout star. So I'm interested. Who did you pick?
Well, the good news is I had, as you would imagine, I had two guys on my list, but I'll just stand on. I think it's Colin Dixon. It feels like his time to be that guy. He's watched Pat Bryant be that guy. He's watched Hank Beatty be that guy. And all the while, he's been productive. He's not just been some bystander watching this offense happen around him. He's played inside, he's played outside, he's done a little bit of everything. And when things get hot and heavy out there, I know he's going to be on the field. And I think he's probably going to build a trust with Caden Hauser to be that safety blanket. He's not as explosive and dynamic as some of those other guys, but he's very reliable. He's a guy who's going to get some yak. He's strong. I don't know where he's going to play full time, and I think that's going to probably change depending on really if Jayshon Platt is out there or if he's not, or if they're running, I don't really know how likely 12 personnel is going to be a lot with this Illinois offense, but I know that whatever package it is, Colin Dixon's on the field. Yeah. And that tells me that I think he's going to be in that mold of maybe that next guy. Is that a first team all Big Ten? I don't know. I mean, those are lofty in this league to get those, but he could be an all Big Ten guy. He's been quietly an incredibly productive player at Illinois. He's just been overshadowed by NFL guys.
Yeah. Colin is just going to be on the field so much. Like, he was on the field 600 plus snaps last year. He's going to be on the field 600 plus snaps again because he doesn't have like one elite trait, but he's just so well-rounded. He's a phenomenal blocker. That might be his best trait. But as you said, he's like a running back in space that can get all this yak because he's got power. He's got some speed, but he's probably more like a 4.5 ish guy than a sub 4.5. So he's not maybe as fast as some of these other players. Hudson Clement has proven he can be a number one guy for a Power 4 team. We kind of saw him later in the season become more of a number one guy or 1B to Hank Beatty. So that's why it could be Hudson Clement. And Jayshon Platt being in the slot, Barry Lunny's force-fed those guys before. So that's why I have some trepidation. Is it Colin Dixon? But I have no doubt Colin Dixon's going to take another step forward, be a wide receiver. And you're probably right, Joey, that last year we were kind of overlooking that the easy answer should be Hank Beatty. We kind of were like, oh, it'll be somebody else. But we saw what Hank Beatty did in the bowl game. We've seen what Colin Dixon has done game after game over the last 2 years. He's an Iron Man. So, yeah, like I would pencil him in for 650 yards receiving, and I think his upside is 200 more than that. Like, he's going to be a good player, and I think the floor is so high with him.
Yeah, and I just think when you have the trust of the people you have the trust in just because of how you do things, not because, like, hey, that guy can make the biggest play. Like, he's not faster than Jayshon Platt, right? But you just know that he's going to be there. And I think that really, really matters, especially in these close games that we talk about that Illinois is in. If you just know you can go to that guy, there's so much value in that. And I can't – his versatility unlocks the receiver room, in my opinion. And I just – there's no scenario short of just getting him a breather that he's not on the field because he can do so much within the offense.
I could see Hudson Clement leading this team in receiving. Yes. I could see Jayshon Platt leading this team in receiving. I cannot see Colin Dixon being under the bottom two. Does that make sense? I just think his four is the highest of these guys. So I'm glad you took wide receiver.
He may lead in yards. He might lead in receptions.
Yeah.
Right? Just because I think there's so much reliability.
Yeah, I do think the targets of this group are going to be more like last year, where Hank Beatty led him with 88, and you had Colin Dixon and Hudson Clement over 50. I don't see this being like 120 targets like Isaiah Williams got, or 90 and 90 like Zachary and Pat Bryant. I think this is going to be more spread out and even like it was last year. I'm interested to talk to Caden Hauser about his wide receivers and what he's seen from those guys, but we'll probably talk more about Platt in another podcast. All right, here's where I go with a guy who's – I don't think he's going to put up big numbers, Joey. But I doubt fans thought Tanner Arkin was a star. But I think in that building, they would say Tanner Arkin was a star. He's one of the best blockers on the team and in the Big Ten. He's a big guy to replace. And they seem to have a lot of confidence in Christian Abney filling a similar role. So we could talk all about Caden Fagan at tight end. And I'm sure we'll do that in our next podcast, talking about swing guys. But Christian Abney is filling a monster role that has been very valuable the last three seasons of this program with Tanner Arkin and Tip Ryman. You wrote about it with your tight ends primer. Who's the Iron Man? Like, those guys have been the Iron Man. So, like, maybe they're 15 to 20 reception guys and more check down targets that aren't these dynamic tight end wide receivers. But they are so important to the success of this offense because of the versatility and mostly the blocking that they provide. Christian Abney's in that role. We saw it in 200 snaps last year. Can he go to 600 and be that guy? I liked what I saw out of him last year. Another year of strength with Tank Wright. I think he can be that. I think he's got higher upside than Tanner Arkin because he's a better athlete. He's a bit taller than him. So, listen, I don't think Christian Abney is going to have 400 receiving yards this year. But in his role, I do think he can be the breakout star of that tight end room internally. Like, I don't think a lot of fans are going to see it on the stat sheet, but he's going to be on the field probably top four reps among the skill players here.
Yeah, that's right. He played 194 snaps last season, Christian Abney. And if among Big Ten tight ends who played at least 100 snaps, what do you think he had from a PFF, which isn't perfect, a PFF run blocking grade? What do you think he ranked?
I mean, definitely top 10, just based on the film that I was watching all season.
Yeah. Christian Abney had the sixth best run blocking grade in the Big Ten among tight ends with 100 snaps. I mean, that matters, right? And when he, I think
where was Arkin on that list? Where was Arkin on that list?
I think he was two, second. Let me make sure. Second best run blocking grade in the Big Ten among tight ends with 100 snaps. I mean, that it's clear to me that the priority, and I get it. We just sat here and raved about the Illinois wide receivers. Like, it's clear to me, like, hey, you get out there and you block. If we can find something for you in the passing game, pass catching game, we're going to do that. But those tight ends are extensions of the offensive line for the most part within this Illinois offense. Now, of course, you would always like to add a dynamic receiving throw. That's been really what's been missing from this offense. If you can point missing, it would take this offense to another level to have someone there who can stretch the middle of the field, put linebackers, safeties in a bind. But you're kind of looking at the way this wide receiver room is, this tight end room is. It's like, would you rather throw it to a tight end who's not particularly proven as a pass catcher, or have some combination of Colin Dixon, Hudson Clement, Jayshon Platt, Braden Trimble, Alex Perry on the field and let those guys go and make plays?
Yeah, it was the conversation when Tip Ryan became a third round pick. Why didn't that guy get more targets? Like, well, do you want to throw less to Zachary Franklin? And, you know, like, was it that year? Yeah, Pat Bryant, like Isaiah Williams. There's Pat Bryant and Isaiah Williams that year. Like, would you rather throw less to those guys? No, I want to target those guys. And Tip got some opportunities and was fine. But yeah, you want to throw to your most talented pass catchers, and those are those guys. But these tight ends still have value.
Yeah, they do. And I think the thing I'm looking at with tight ends in particular is, okay, what is the baseline level of competency is not the right word, but where do you need to be as a blocker to be good enough to justify being on the field because your strength is being a pass catcher? Does that make sense? Like, it was kind of the cold rust question. We know you're a very, very good pass catcher, but what's your baseline to earn the, hey, we know we can put you in there and hold your own at the line of scrimmage to really enhance what you can do downfield? I don't necessarily know that I know that answer, but I think it's pretty high for what they expect on the line of scrimmage.
If you had, like, explain that better. If you had scales, I'd say 75% is blocking, right? The importance of what you bring, like that. Now, being a dynamic receiver and a great blocker, oh, that's a weapon. Like, that's a Colston Lovell and Tyler Warren, right? And Tyler Warren wasn't the best blocker. Those guys are hard to find.
Ten of those guys in college football at any given point in time.
But at the same time, you just saw the NFL and that tight end run that the Jacksonville Jaguars started famously by taking a guy who didn't have many catches. Tip Ryan became a third-round pick 2 years ago or 3 years ago because of his blocking. Like, they value these guys so much because of what they bring to the run game and just the fact that they're a threat in the passing game. So Barry Lindy's run a lot of 12 personnel. I do think that goes down a little bit because I don't know who the number two guy is. Could it be Fagan? Potentially. Could it be Davin Stoffel? Potentially. But the point is, Christian Abney's your starting tight end. Like, he is number one. He's the guy that's going to be in 11 personnel and 12 personnel. So I do think, even if the receiving numbers aren't there, he's going to make a huge impact on this offense, for better or worse.
Yeah, all that to say, I think Christian Abney can hold his own as a blocker. There may have been some moments early on that he was a little dinged up, and I think you saw the snap counts reflect that last year. But I remember reading your film reviews last season and watching last season. It's like, man, this guy he's moving people in the opportunities that he's given to move people, and those were obviously not as huge because he had Arkin out there doing Tanner Arkin things. But yeah, Christian Abney, he's also, now, we're not trying to make him sound like he's not able to go catch passes. Like, he's a former quarterback. He's a good athlete. That position takes some projection. So he might be able to surprise with a little bit more receiving than you would maybe think of him. But his, I think the priority for him is, hey, go open some lanes in the run game. Let Khalil Valentine, Aiden Lawford get some space to get out there. And maybe he'll be a red zone threat. Maybe he'll be a guy who can make some yards after the catch. You can stretch it a little bit. But if he gives you the blocking that he's capable of giving you, I think that there is breakout quality there for him, right? It's just not going to be some sexy, you know, huge receiving numbers.
All right, Joe, you got any more? We've hit on every position except offensive line.
And that's where I had a guy. And I feel like I'm taking your thunder on this a little bit. And I don't want to do that because I know he is very much your guy. Someone on the offensive line has to be that. I have so before I'm just going to kind of set how I got here. Jake Renfro, are you going to play enough? Brandon Henderson, are you going to take that step? Are the tackles ready? Are the tackles Big Ten ready? I don't know. Micah Matalau, I think there's still some more weight to put on there, but the reviews on him have seemingly been very good that we heard through spring. That'll continue in the fall. You beat some real talent to get Micah Matalau in your program. You beat some really, really good programs to get him.
The fact that you beat out BYU for a guy who just completed a 2-year mission because he's part of the Church of Latter-day Saints, pretty impressive.
And also, BYU's a pretty good program.
A lot of money.
Beyond just so
that's another example of, listen, I know you want a defensive lineman. Illinois invested. Like, you don't get Mac Matalau without investing in him. You don't get Kane Hauser without, valuing him and obviously the DBs too.
I will say, I don't know that I have a lot of question about if he's your starting left guard. Like, I feel like there's, I don't want to say no doubt because I don't want to get in training camp. We're sitting here in a month and a half. It's like, actually.
There's Brandon Hanson out there.
Yeah, that's right. But I don't really feel like I think it's going to go anywhere else. I think he's your left guard, and I think he's got that physicality. As long as he can put on the necessary weight and strength, I trust Hank Wright to get him there, given he got here in January. Like, there's been a long runway to do that. I just feel like he could be that guy where it's like, man, he's physical as hell. He's probably going to have some moments where, like Melvin had, where he knocks the heck out of someone, and then like that pops up on Twitter. Right, and it's like, look at Illinois left guard Mike Matalau moving people. I just think there's a lot there. I trust Bart Miller and Byron Bell to get Mike Matalau there. I trust Hank Wright to get his body ready as he just continues to put on some weight and strength after that mission trip. But so it's got to be someone on the offensive line. There's probably safer bets in like a Renfro or a Henderson. But you sold me over the last 8 months on Mike Matalau.
I'd love it to be Henderson. It's time for him to take another step. I love that you have 2 years of eligibility left with him now. I think Christian Martin's ceiling is really high. I think he's going to have some growing pains, but the athletic traits are all there. I think the guy outside of Renfro that probably has the highest floor for me is Micah Matalau, which is crazy because he hasn't proven it at this level, and he did have to add back to his body after a 2-year mission and being away from the game, but he's done that quickly. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Nick Allegretti. He's kind of a boxy player, maybe not the most athletic, but just physical as hell. And I'm just a big fan of what he can bring as a prospect. Number one JUCO guard for people who didn't know that. Nathan Knappick's really interesting, but again, has to prove it. Had to add a lot of strength. But yeah, I think Renfro, Matalau, and Henderson on that interior, given the questions that you have at tackle, as those guys work themselves in, those guys got to be your strength on that interior.
Yeah, I'm with you, and you really need that because I do still have quite, like, Christian Martin has a lot of traits. He's still got to do this at the Power 4 level. Nathan Knappick had one great game at the Power 4 level. He's had one game at the Power 4 level. Like, so you still got to see a little bit more out of that, and I'm in on Micah Matalau, and we'll see what anything else beyond that looks like. For Illinois, I do have one other one that I wanted to – it's not a name. I just wanted to – like, there are established stars, right? Like, in particular, like, I don't want to talk about breakout candidates and completely ignore Matthew Bailey and Xavier Scott because they've already broken out. What can they elevate to? Yeah. right? Like, what? Where do you think those two? I think Bailey in this system, he's going to put up some numbers.
Oh yeah,
like that. This system is designed for Matthew Bailey to put up some numbers, and Xavier Scott is the guy that maybe you make those game-changing plays. We've seen that out of Xavier Scott. Maybe they'll go back to more man. I would think that makes sense within the scope of this defense. I like Xavier Scott playing man coverage. So where do you think, Jeremy, those two can elevate from already broken out to, like, what's next on the plate of those two in particular?
Matthew Bailey, we know, is a tackling machine, right? Like, when he is healthy, and even when he's, like, taped up and has all these harnesses and stuff on.
He was glued together a little bit last year, yeah.
Just a tough nose, versatile defensive chess piece, right? And I think the floor is so high for him. Now it's those game-changing plays, right? Like, the game-changing plays we've seen Xavier Scott make, the plays that Gabe Akis made that just changed the game. I think Matthew Bailey is going to be in a more aggressive defensive scheme. I think he's going to be weaponized a little bit more in having those kind of opportunities to intercept the ball. Having healthy shoulders will help him potentially do some of those things, but also just being put in positions where he's talked a lot about the freedom he's got in this defense. Like, that was the word he's kind of used, where you can just kind of line up and play. I'm really interested to see that, because Sidney Brown, and we always use the comp, but his last year, he just looked so free. Like, his first 3-4 years, like, there was always some thinking, but towards the back half of that first year with Ryan Walters, you think of the Minnesota game, and then the entire senior year, that guy's just flying around, confusing people, and just being a pest defensively and making big plays. He just wasn't thinking. He was just playing. I think that's where Matthew Bailey can really thrive.
Well, that's what I was going to say. If we're going to do the Sidney Brown thing, and I have been an absolute sucker for that for the last 4 years.
Very different players, but yeah.
Yes. We have to acknowledge and point out, like, Sidney Brown's senior season, he made a crap ton of those plays. He was a ball hawk at that position. He took the leap, and it's what got him drafted where it got him drafted, at being on the ball, making those game-changing plays on the ball. So if we're going to do the comp, and it's been a fun comp, the next step in that comp is making some of those plays if you're Matthew Bailey, and I think the system should set up for him to be in a position to do that. Now he's got to go do that.
Xavier Scott, healthy Xavier Scott, man, just a game-changer.
Changed the whole defense last year.
You didn't have that guy, and the fact that you could have him and you know, Juice Clark in coverage, and we'll see with the other corner spot, Jaquan Morris. I still think Tanner Heckel's going to have some kind of impact in there, and Nick Hankins, guy I think we're both very high on, that can make an immediate impact. But you can play a lot more man coverage, frees your defense up to do more aggressive things that they want to do. So I just think being able to put Xavier Scott out there again, I know we knew it last year, but looking back, it's not a surprise your defense struggled when you lost your best defensive player in game three and minute – 9 minutes left in the game that you'd already won. So, like, it's not a surprise that the defense in the secondary really struggled, and without being able to play the way you wanted to in the secondary, Aaron Henry, for all his faults or all the things you want to pick apart, his hands were tied when you lose your top player and you don't have another guy that's capable of doing that.
Yeah, I actually texted you as I was doing some defensive line research last week, and I said the biggest problem with this defensive line last year was the secondary. Because you had to do so much, in particular with your outside linebackers and putting more on you had to do so much to accommodate for not having Xavier Scott. And yeah, Aaron Henry's hands were tied. And I think it's also fair to say, hey, this guy shouldn't have been in the game. Yeah. I mean, and that is something I want to see what that looks like these first 3 weeks of the season. If you have a shorter leash, especially with 5-for-5 being a thing, and you have a bigger pool of guys, presumably, you'd be comfortable with. You get some of those guys out of the game midway through.
There were times Luke Altmyer was still playing a drive in the fourth quarter in some of those games. I'm like, I might want to get him out of here.
You got to get this dude out of here.
But especially Matthew Bailey and Xavier Scott, given their injury history. And Xavier's injury history kind of gets overlooked outside of last year. Guy has had one healthy spring ball. Has he even had that? I don't know. Like, he's always had some surgery in the offseason that's kept him from practicing a lot.
Yeah, if it was healthy, if there was one, it was early in his career. It's just been kind of the story of him a little bit. And in truth, it's why he's still in Champaign right now. It's why Matthew Bailey is still in Champaign right now. But now you need to benefit from some of those tougher years that they had, maybe missing some time or being unhealthy in the offseason. Well, now it's time to really reap those rewards of having the secondary, which is it the most talented group on the team? I say that and I hesitate because wide receiver I'm very high on. I like the offensive line.
I think defensive back, without a doubt, is the most talented. Yeah. Both in proven talent, I think Matthew Bailey and Xavier Scott are draft picks next year. I think Juice Clark has the potential to be. I think Nick Hankins eventually will probably be an NFL draft pick. I'm still really intrigued by guys like Mac Rosetich, James Finley coming in as a transfer. He was a four-star transfer by 24/7 Sports. Jacob Eberhardt and Emerian Thomas are guys I really, really like. So, yeah, I think it's not only the most talented, I think it's probably the deepest you have. Like, Tanner Heckel's still a guy that I know I keep bringing up, but he intrigues me. Jaquan Morris is number one JUCO corner. I think without a doubt corner is the best, and then wide receiver to me.
Yeah, it's a very, very good defensive backfield. You're right. I like the depth too. Like, obviously we're not talking about it as the most talented if Bailey and Xavier Scott are in the NFL, but I don't think we're freaking out about it either. Right? I mean, like, I think we'd have questions, you know, hey, who fills in at these spots? But I think the talent and the depth there, like, if you told me Xavier Scott was in the NFL and Nick Hankins was fighting for that nickel spot, yeah, I feel pretty good about that. I'd wonder about the growing pains, but that's just kind of the depth that this team has. But all told, yeah, Illinois should be very happy those two are packing champagne.
All right, there are people listening to the same. What about Grant Bierman? What about Braden Trimble? What about, you know, give me another guy.
Caden Fagan.
Caden Fagan, yeah, Demetrius Johnson. We will talk about those guys, I think, in the next podcast. We're going to do one about the swing guys, the X factors of this team. But I thought today was a good chance to just talk about the stars of this team and guys who could elevate into stars. So that's all I had for this one. You got anything to add, Joey?
I got nothing more, man. This has been fun. It is very fun. I was sitting here today and just like planning out the rest of the month. One, for you and I to try to enjoy a few more weeks of quote-unquote summer. And two, I just want to get back to football. Like, this position primers are fun, get your mind going, but it's also like I want fresh quotes. I want to see a little bit more, which isn't going to happen until the game starts. Yeah. Like, I just want to get back into that mode. And so this, it's fun to talk about. I'm very much ready to talk to people more and to see more.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for Joey Wagner, I'm Jeremy Werner. Thank you to everybody for listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Give us a follow, rating, review wherever you get your podcast. Check us out on YouTube. Hit that like button, subscribe, and hit the notifications bell. But we'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.